personal attitude be toward selling your shares? If somebody came along and said, here's a very good offer, leave to one side what Mr. Blatchford said about educating the shareholders. Suppose he had educated you, and somebody came along and said, here's some money, and it was certainly a fair offer.
I feel that that's my link to my nativeness. And I want my son to have that. Yeah. And I don't think he'll get it any other way.
Right. Okay, well.
Sorry. Well, you can see how strongly I feel.
Yes, I can. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
During the course of the evening, if you don't mind, my wife may take one or two photographs of us all here. Well, we're...
Can I just read something else?
Please do. Okay. Please do.
Then I'll think of my own later on.
Okay.
This is from Kenneth Eugene Blatchford, and he's a resident of Seward. I regret not being able to attend this hearing, but I felt that it was important that I voice my opinion concerning ANSCA and its effect on myself as an Alaskan native of Inupiaq origin. Just a minute. This is how Kenny writes, so if I'm trying to decipher it as I go along. First of all, I'd like to say that overall I think that ANSCA has had a positive effect on the lives of most Alaskan Natives, in the sense that the Act finally recognized Alaskan Natives as a sovereign people capable of self-determination. Through this Act, its once proud original people of this state can hold their heads high once again and forevermore. Now, if we had it all to do again, I would like to have seen the Act given more time to be investigated, because I feel that it was shoved on through mostly because of the pipeline. An example of the results of such hurried action was evident in our region's acquisition of land consisting of mountainous tops and glaciers. Another gripe I have is the alienation of two segments of our native population, the young born after the cutoff date and the elderly, those who won't be around in 1991 to enjoy its benefits. Another gripe I have is that I believe that all Alaskan Natives should be entitled to 160 acres of land, not just those who qualify because of traditional use or enrolled to a village. And last but not least, I feel that by creating 13 regional profit
I feel kind of strange because I am young and I am coming up into all this, and it's going to start changing and going and happening, and I want to find out, you know, where things should go and how they should go, and it should be managed well so that people don't get taken advantage of. I don't plan on selling it, but I think other people of my age, and older and younger, think of the money aspect. And that's what they think of, money, for, you know, sell this and you get it back. Well, that's the immediate return. But as I think you mentioned, it's a part of your heritage that you're selling. And I think that needs to be emphasized somewhere. I don't know how, but it needs to be emphasized. And what else do I have here? I guess the whole thing is that I'm just concerned about what's going on, and I'm going to try and find out as much as I can and be a part of what's going on. I'm in college, and I'm part of my major is political science. So I hope to come back to Alaska and get involved in my corporation in some aspect such as that, and I think that'll be helpful in the future. So, I don't know. We'll have to see how things go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to have a word before we take a little break? Well, we'll take a break for about 5 or 10 minutes then, and then start again. And
is this in mind that corporations are businesses, that they are business organizations. And tribal councils are governments. And that is a different kind of an institution than a business corporation. And governments determine who their members will be all the time. That's called citizenship. And there are still, in Alaska, governments of natives in native communities, as well as in native villages. Village corporations, businesses. And so there are those two institutions. And you are a shareholder in a corporation, but you can be a member of a tribe or a village community. Now, where does that leave Seward? And I suppose that's an interesting question. Well, but you're on the map, then.
Yeah, but we're supposed to do.
Mrs. Swartz?
I find that a sort of a puzzle, too, because we were east of the mountains, and there was quite a large Indian reservation near Newport. We knew a large family, and children were 1/16. And here's where you're talking of tribal government, right? All right, when timber or anything was sold, every member enrolled in the reservation got their share or whatever it was. And I remember thinking at that time that it was really quite strange, because that isn't the way it is up here. And I know that you can cut a piece of pie only so many times and then you won't have anything. But it's a puzzle the way the tribal governments can do something and then, you know, the regions do something else.
Well, the trick perhaps is not to cut the pie in the first place. And that's when you talk about the division of the proceeds from a tribal transaction, like I think you mean by then. Yeah, lumber. So some timber is sold, and then the money can be divided up among all of the tribal members. That's not like dividing up the land among all the tribal members, or dividing up some kind of evidence, stock, ownership in the land among all the tribal members. You can only do that so many times before you end up with, you know, just the pieces of the pie.
Things like this that we know that are confusing to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, that may be, I'm not advocating any particular point here, but it may be that that is one of the reasons that native governments are becoming of interest in Alaska, because as institutions, they don't seem to have some of these problems. But I think it's very important in looking at it all to realize that there are two institutions, two different kinds of institutions, businesses, corporations, and political institutions called governments. And they work different ways. They have their strengths and their weaknesses, both of them.
Well, we cleared that up.
Well, it's good to get an answer.
Yeah.
I may not be satisfied, but it was an
community, but just being interested in history and whatnot, I know how things have gone over the ages, how certain people have been, you know, given a bill of goods and it looks good at the time, and 20, 30 years later they lose something that they thought was real good. I come from the Appalachian region of Ohio, so I know how people down there have lost their land and their coal rights and their mineral rights to the subsurface and what have you. You know, correct me if I'm mistaken. I understand you say the corporations, if they can make a decision if all the land is gone, and the people in the local villages themselves may not have anything to do anything with it if the regional corporations decide to sell their shares?
Well, it's not quite like that. In the lower 48, there are corporate takeovers every day. You go and you make a tender for shares, or you go out and you try to buy up shares in a corporation, and then the people running the corporation wake up one day and they discover they're a minority. Somebody else controls the corporation. Well, since all the native land in Alaska, virtually all the native land in Alaska, is held by the native corporations, after 1991, these corporations could be taken over by corporations run by white people, or by Japanese, or by anybody.
Well, the defense industry, if they decided the land was in an area that was they want to impact, make it.
Well, the defense, if land is needed for national defense purposes, it can be taken anyway. But you're quite right in saying that in the past, in the United States and in every other country, various schemes have been worked out to take their land from the native people. That's the history of North America. And back in 1887, in the lower 48, Congress passed a law that's very, very similar to ANCSA, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And the result was that in 50 years, The Indian people in the lower 48 wound up owning only 50% of the land they'd started out with. And many people are concerned about that precedent, because it is very, very similar to this ANCSA setup. We went to a meeting at Kasan, that's a village down in southeast Alaska. And there, when they under the land claims, there's 100 people in that village. Under the land claim settlement, they got some timber, because there are marketable timber down there. So they sold their timber, and they put the money in the bank, and they gave everybody $25,000. All 100 people in the village got $25,000, and they left the rest of the money in the bank, and out of the interest it earns every year, they pay everybody in the village $10,000.
I think they could have made it. The other thing is, as far as the land goes, they gave us a 20-year limit. The regional corporation spent 12 years trying to get their land, which only gives them only 8 more years to go. The village corporation was a little bit more fortunate. We did get, excuse me, we did get our land earlier, the village corporation. But by the same token, we lost many years of utilizing that land. Plus the fact that the EAC corporation was, I would be willing to bet, was the last village corporation to be certified. Because we had, the village of EAC was lost to the infringement of the Copp River Highway right here in Cordova. The land was taken away from the village. Consequently, we have no land base because of it. But another issue is the sand and gravel issue. I do not believe that the regions should control the sand and gravel in any village lands. I think that that was a very stupid mistake on the part of our so-called benefactors, I guess, that you had to go to somebody else for a natural resource that you could utilize yourself as a form of making yourself self-sufficient. It would have been one of our very best things to make ourselves self-sufficient here in Cordova and the Village Corporation. I imagine you haven't heard too much of this in a lot of the villages, but right here it's a very prime area. It's very good. The sand and gravel, I understand. I'm not sure, but I understand comes under the mining and mineral laws, and that's the reason it was put in. Are you familiar with that, Judge?
Mm-hmm.
And am I correct in that?
I think so, yeah.
If that is the case, then any time any individual goes and digs gravel out of any place, why don't they have a ecology study, just like they do for the Red Devil mine or the quartz mine? And if it comes under those mining laws, then that's the way. If they want to play the game, let's play the game all the way. I don't think that the sand and gravel should have ever been given to the regional corporations.
Well, that's the issue, as you
yes.
see it. Yeah.
And like I said, the 1971, the cutoff date, I have had very, very mixed feelings about that. I had no mixed feelings about the elderly people, because I felt that the elderly people, we could have given a time limit to paid them given them some cash. We were forbidden to do that by the government. We could not distribute to the elderly people, which we definitely, the EAC Corporation, wanted to do, so that those people could realize something out of the land claims. We figured they would never live long enough to do it. And as it works out, not only the older ones, we've lost a lot of the young ones that won't see anything out of it. And it keeps going like it is. I'll probably be the next one that won't see anything out of it. The sanded gravel issue was a very sore spot with me. But it, like I said, it is one of our very best sources of income in this area, but we cannot utilize it. We are being robbed blind here in Cordova on sand and gravel because the regional corporation, I don't know what they think about it, but
we need to educate. I also teach two years ago I decided it was time to become a teacher. I teach in community college in Native Arts and Heritage. And one of the things I do teach is land claims. It's amazing how many people didn't know about land claims. I even gave them a test, and it's amazing.
To both Native and non-Native?
To the community college, yes, Native and non-Native. And the first class I had was all school teachers. It was really great. Here I was teaching school teachers. It was a good feeling. But it's amazing how many people don't know anything about the land claims. They don't know how many corporations they are. They don't know why the corporations were started. They don't know why the land claims were started in the first place. And so we get to take them through a process of land claims. Then we go through culture communication. Then we go through cultural enhancement. And it's just to kind of trying to get people oriented into the why the land claims and why we're here. I mean, we live in a community. We live rather well together, I think. And I was brought up in this community, and I'm also Danish and Aleut. My mother was Aleut, and my father was Danish. And so it was, but I was brought up in the Native culture. And so, but it's one of those things that you think about, but it's hard, one of those hard decisions to make, as well as my family. It's what their decisions are to be in 1991 when they're going to be taxed. Any improvement on that 2 acres will be taxed. We build a house, and it's going to be taxed. Whether the city of Cordova goes all the way out to the Harkney Bay subdivision or not. It's one of those things that maybe in the future. It's been talked about for the past 20 years about becoming a borough and annexation. One of the fellows was talking about the land base for the village of Viac. We did have a land base, but it was annexed into the city of Cordova in 1971 because they needed a tax base. And so therefore, and even though 98% of the people voted against it, it still was annexed into the city of Cordova, the village of Eac, as a, quote, old town. And so therefore, we don't have what you classify as a land base. We do have people, we have a tribal facility. The piece of property that the tribal facility is sitting on is the original village of Eac. So therefore, we do have, 200 by 250 feet, piece of land that is called the village of Eac. And so, but these are things that we have to look at in the land claims. There may have been some positive things, but they're overrided by by the negative things that the land claims has brought. And I could probably go on for hours, but I know there's some other people that would like to testify.
Okay. Yes. Well, could I ask you a couple of questions,
sure.
Mrs. Nichols? You say that the Village Corporation has established a subdivision
yes.
and has allocated 1.5 acre parcels, is it?
Two, there's more than, it's 2 point whatever. There's, most of them are over 2 points, the two acres.
Well, how were those distributed?
By lottery.
And how many parcels are there?
There was 326 plus 90 some extra acres.
I see. And some of the people who received those have now sold them.
Yes. The village, the EAC Corporation does have the first right of refusal. And then if they don't, you know, won't, of course they didn't don't have any money to buy it back, and then they're given a letter of refusal, and then they can sell their lot.
And this has happened, has it?
Yes, it has.
You say that, did the native village of EAC want, I'm talking about the Native Corporation.
Okay, there's two.
The Village Corporation.
Two entities.
Yes, and you call the Native Village of EAC the that's the non-profit.
That's a non-profit. Right. We are a traditional council.
Yeah. Well, did the Village Corporation want to buy those lots back, or was it a matter of indifference to them?
Well, I think it was a monetary.
Well, they didn't have the money.
If they had
the money, would they have wanted to
they
buy
may
it?
Have.
I see. And you say that the city of Cordova, it's the city limits don't extend to the new subdivision.
No, they don't. Thank heavens.
Well, if they did, why do you say thank heavens? Is it because of taxation?
Taxation. And they wouldn't have been able to provide water and sewer. I live in a subdivision also called Heaney Creek. And they wanted to annex us into it, into the city limits also. But they don't provide water and sewer for us. We all have wells and septic tanks. And
well, at the subdivision that the Village Corporation established, how many people are living out there?
Not anybody right now. A lot of people are living at what is classified as White Shed. Those are people that have lived there even before the subdivision.
Well, but they can build houses on the subdivision.
Yes, yes, they can build houses.
Could you tell me a little bit about the Native Village of EAC? You're chairman, and you're engaged in delivering social services to Native people here in Cordova. Is that the?
Yes, we do. We classified before as a service area of at least 400 Natives, which includes the American Indians, as well as not only the people that are registered to the EAC Corporation, but from all over Alaska. And we have a social service aide that's hired through the North Pacific Rim, who takes care of the fee agent, and she also does alcoholism and mental health counseling. We operate under Bureau of Indian Affairs tribal operation grants, and we have had since 1976, and which takes care of our staff. I'm also hired by the village to be the grant administrator. I administer all the grants. And we do social services. I'm also hired by the North Pacific Rim as a community health representative. I take care of, as a liaison person, I take care of all the problems and make sure that people have a line to the Alaska Native Medical Center and the doctors there. I'm also on the Alaska Native Health Board, which is a statewide board, and I work in health problems. Or a piece of land that we called our village that we were denied acceptance into a land claim settlement. And our village was not named, and so therefore we had to fight. We had two hearings whereby we had to have testimony saying that we were and were the native village of Eyak. And we have the 320 people. In fact, there are some that we probably had more if we'd have been able to have. The time frame was such a short one that we only could get 326. If we'd had more time, we would probably had more than that would be registered to the village.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I could just ask Mr. McCarka a question. Mr. Christensen raised the issue of sovereignty or self-determination, but he speaks as somebody who comes from a village, I think, that is not from Cordova. And you mentioned self-determination too, and maybe there's nothing you can say to help me here, but in some of the villages I've been to, you know, on the Arctic Ocean or the Bering Sea, where there's a native village and people are living, more or less living off the land, and they constitute 90% of the population. Their argument is, well, we should be running things here because we've always been here and we're still mainly the only people here. In some places where the population is maybe half and half, like Tanana, maybe it could work, I don't know. Places like Cordova, where it's predominantly Caucasian, I take it, predominantly non-native, it's a little harder to see how it could work. And I just didn't want to leave here tonight without asking you if you had any more observations about that. I know it's hard sometimes to see how all this would fit together, but I was just curious what you...
Henry McCarthy speaking. On the sovereignty issue, are you talking about?
Yeah, and well, you said self-determination,
yes,
and I take it you meant the same thing.
Right. Well, I look at, first off, on the sovereignty issue is that I think that the people should have that particular right to form their own government or run their own governments, because, like I mentioned, the fact that if other countries, towns, cities, municipalities, boroughs, and etc. had the right to form their governments, we also should have that right. I don't mean it in the sense that we should be, I'll hook in the crab pot issue, held back, restricted. I think that we should have that right. We should definitely have that right to choose our own destiny. The self-determination issue is, I went to a lot of the native workshops and the AFN meetings and all those issues were brought up. As far as the Indian Self-Determination Act, I think we should have that. That fits in together. Self-determination, we should be able to choose our own destiny. We should be able to make our own determination of what we want to do. That restriction has fit in so much, you know, I keep using restriction, we're held back. So that's when I say I mean the self-determination. We should be able to have that right to choose our own destiny. I just feel that we're no different than anyone else. But because of that restriction, we are, there's where we're struggling. On the sovereignty issue, we should also have that right. I don't mean in the sense of being a state or anything, but we're no different than anyone else. I don't think that we shouldn't be denied the rights to those particular things of that other people had the right to choose. Well, a lot of people have said it. Clean up your own closet or clean up your own backyard before you dictate to me. We want the right and the privilege to that self-determination. And we're no different than anyone else.
Right. Okay, thanks. Mr. Olson.
Gilbert Olson. You were referring to how the Native community and the city of Cordova come under this particular sovereignty, so to speak. It goes back, I don't think there's any one individual here that has ever served on the city council of the city of Cordova. It's not that they haven't had the chance, they're individual people, they do not believe